Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm Gianni.
Well, Gianni, another week and another Haaland blank. But it wasn't really Haaland that hurt me this week. And I'm sure we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Bruno Fernandes in a minute. But how did game week 15 go for you?
Yeah, it was all right till Monday night football. And it's kind of been, yeah, one of those seasons. I'm around the half a million mark in terms of overall ranks. I guess I'm fairly happy. And obviously the 5-3 transfers is great and now really exciting. Fortunately, I've had Foden for 3 weeks, so that's been huge. And Foden, another big score this week, 12 points. But yeah, Haaland captain blank wasn't fun, especially knowing the week before, you know, he'd hauled and that was a week I decided to bet against him. So just can't get the Haaland captaincy right at the minute. And again, captaincy moving forward is a big one this week. But yeah. Fine, I had Mbeumo on Monday night, just not Bruno, and Bruno's score was massive.
Do you know, it's funny, isn't it? Because for the last two game weeks, I haven't had a Manchester United asset, and I've sat here on both Monday evening and Thursday evening and thought, oh, am I going to get away with it? And I have, because the Manchester United assets haven't returned. But I knew I wouldn't really get away with it against Wolves on Monday evening. I knew this was going to be one of those. So I had a really nice green arrow going into Monday night and Bruno turned it a little bit red. But it was only a little bit red in the end. So it could have been far, far worse than it was. I bought in Phil Foden this week. So that was nice. I was glad to have his points in my team rather than acting against me. And the Gay-Hee last minute goal that we'll talk about in a little bit was really nice. That really did boost my rank. But Gianni, I had a nightmare with my bench this week because it was one of those weeks where obviously I played who I thought would be my strongest defence, and therefore I benched Van de Ven for a clean sheet and I also benched Senesi for a clean sheet because I just didn't see Chelsea and Brentford not scoring. So we'll talk about those two games in a little while, but we've all had our transfers topped up, like you say. So for everybody looking at the app or the website now, you'll have your 5-3 transfers in the bank. Have you spent any of yours yet?
I haven't, and I have noticed a huge amount of volatility in the transfer market, the price rises. I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like it. So a mid-season, and it's not surprising. You know, managers are checking the app and going, 5-3 transfers, and they're going, I better spend these. Some probably think they need to spend them or they'll lose them, and that's not the case. So yeah, I haven't spent any yet, but I'm fortunate that the players that are really shooting up in value, many of them I already had. So Foden, for example, I've had. He's gone up 0.6 million in 8 days. I think that might be a record. Like, I've never seen anything like that. Players like Thiago going up in price, I've got him. So yeah, I don't feel like my hand has been forced yet, but no doubt I'll be using a couple of them. And I've got my eyes on a couple of players that no doubt I'll be bringing in.
Yeah, I'm the same. Not used either of or any of them yet, but I'm definitely getting a little bit trigger happy. I'm going to wait and see what happens in the European football this week before I make any major decisions with those transfer plans. Should we start with Monday night and just rip the band-aid off, given that we both were on the wrong side of a bit of a battering from Manchester United? So Wolves scored their first goal in over 8 hours of football. So from that perspective, I suppose, you know, we take some positives and they will take some positives from that. But it really was all about Manchester United. And in particular, it was really all about Bruno Fernandes, wasn't it?
It felt like it was going to be a Bruno game from minute one. I watched the first half thinking, okay, second half's going to be ugly here for Bruno. Bruno's going to really turn it on. And with no Gomez in the middle of the park for Wolves, it was clearly a huge amount of space. And Wolves were having a go, and Rob Edwards' teams do. And we need to remember that when our FPL players face Wolves. A bit like when Edwards was at Luton. It was like, that was a great attacking fixture for us because Luton would always have a go and they'd leave themselves vulnerable. Wolves are doing the same. And Bruno just had complete freedom of the middle of the park. And it felt like goals were going to come. In fact, 18 points. It could have been more. Like, he missed a couple of big chances as well. Obviously, he gets the penalty. And again, we need to notice Man United get penalties pretty much more than any other team. I think Brentford probably edged that. But other than that, like, you're going to get pens from Bruno. You're going to get the routes to points. I did have Mbeumo, who played up top and he got the goal. So that was a bit of a silver lining. But yeah, United look good. And I tell you what, Mason Mount being back in the team, that front three looked really good. But now I'm just looking at it going, I know I want to buy Bruno, but I'm also very conscious Mazraoui, Ahmad, and Mbeumo, that entire right-hand side is going to AFCON. Does that lower the appeal for Man United attack? Maybe, but Bruno's still going to be the outstanding player.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Bruno, I just thought was fantastic in this one. And he was a player that I knew could really hurt me this week against a Wolves side that have been really poor over the course of the season so far. He created five chances, which only Cherki at Manchester City could beat this week. So was very much the creator-in-chief in that Manchester City team. Like you say, I was really impressed by Mason Mount, but I was also impressed by Cunha. His eight shots in the game week was more than anybody else and could make for an interesting differential over AFCON. But like you say, it is really difficult to know how AFCON is going to affect Manchester United and whether we want to be heavily investing in them in the immediate aftermath of these players leaving for AFCON or whether we just want to give it a week and wait and see. Now, the fact that we have these five transfers, I suppose, gives us the opportunity to have a bit of a punt on players, to have a little bit of a play with it and then be able to fix it again if we've done the wrong thing. But I was really impressed by Mason Mount, and I was watching the aftermath of the game, and they had James Maddison in the commentary box here in the UK, and he was making some really interesting comments about Mason Mount and how he played. And I was thinking, you know, if we can get this out of Mason Mount constantly, he could be a fantastic option in FPL, but we just haven't seen that consistency yet. So if we start to see that regular game time and then the performance level that we saw against Wolves, maybe is an interesting option. But we have to remember that this was against Wolves, who are really struggling so far this season.
It's a dream formation for Mount, which we've not seen him play a huge amount in, but with the kind of 3-4-3 setup, it's two inside forwards behind the nine, and he loves playing as an inside forward on the left. And that's exactly, he's not having to play too wide and he's close to the front, and it really works for him. The problem with Mount is, and we like Mount, is he's so cheap. It's great, 5.9 million. It's, if you're going Mount, can you really go without Bruno? And I think it's got to be an addition. Bruno does feel like such an obvious buy right now for those that don't have him. And the Man United fixtures are really good. And again, when we look at the festive schedule, we're often put off by players who are like, oh, are there going to be a rotation risk? Are they going to get injured? Will they miss a game?
Yeah.
Bruno's one of those reliable assets we've ever had in FPL. The guy doesn't get injured and he doesn't get substituted and he's got all the routes to points. Like my plan this week, I was going to wait a week. I was going to wait till Mbeumo goes to AFCON and go Mbeumo to Bruno. I think I might just make that move a week early. I don't think I can go another week without him.
It's hard for me because I just had two choices this week. It was either get Bruno Fernandes or it was get Phil Foden. And I decided, and maybe this is a nice segue into Manchester City as well, but I decided to go with Foden just with the form that he had been in. And I just kind of trusted Man City a little bit more than I trusted Manchester United, because over the last couple of matches, I felt like we haven't really seen the best of Manchester United in matches where I would have expected them to, particularly against a 10-man Everton side a couple of game weeks ago. So I wasn't sure exactly how they would be in the games around this one, although I did think that they would be good here. But Foden, as you mentioned at the beginning, the price increases that man has had over the last week have been phenomenal, up by 0.6 million now. So if you haven't got him, it kind of feels like you have to now, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm buzzing on this one. I've had every single one of those price rises. I paid 8 million
dream.
On Sunday night. I can't believe in 8 days he's gone up 0.6. And we know in FPL, in any given game week, the maximum you can rise is 0.3. Mm. So ordinarily, we don't see that this sort of rise. But because there was a midweek round of fixtures, we've effectively had three game weeks in those 8 days, which means the ceiling for Foden's rises is even higher. But yeah, it was 7% owned. He was 8 million, and now we're looking at 8.6. And by the time some are listening to this, he might even be 8.7, but 26% owned. Yeah. Like, he is in so many active teams. And what we want from Foden is playing close to the front in a number 10 position, playing with confidence and taking players on, and a 90-minute man that's not a rotation risk. And for the first time in probably 8-9 months, and I include most of last season in this, we can say safely he's all of those things. Because last season he was often playing wide or out the team or not playing with confidence. This is the Foden of 2 years ago when he was player of the year. Yeah. So yeah, you got to get on him. When he's hot, he's really hot.
And I think, you know, there were a lot of managers that thought maybe we might see some rotation in game week 15 for Foden because of the Champions League action that we have coming up this week, because he'd played so many minutes over game weeks 14 and 13 and they'd come in quick succession. And the fact that we didn't see that and we saw him straight in the starting 11, I think tells you everything you need to know about how important he is for Manchester City right now. He is playing so well in that position. And where we are seeing rotation across the rest of the sides with the likes of Cherki and Reinders, we just aren't seeing that with Foden and Doku as well on the other side. Like the pair of them are holding those positions. Maybe we're seeing a bit more rotation of minutes with Doku in terms of the end of games and coming off early. But with Foden, we regularly are seeing the 90-minute man now. And that is exactly what we want in a Manchester City side that are back in a massive title race now with Arsenal slipping up at the weekend. So this is kind of the perfect mix, I think, for us as FPL managers with Phil Foden. And I must admit, the last couple of weeks, obviously with game week 13, he didn't hurt me too much, although I did the wrong thing there because that was my free hit week and I'd gone for Doku instead. And it was one of those where it could easily have gone the other way because Doku played well. Heading into the midweek in 14, I was thinking, oh, I really would like Foden, but I had other things that I had to be dealing with. So going into 15, it then became a like, right, okay, we need to deal with,
it's a priority.
With this. Yeah, this is a massive priority over getting a goalkeeper because I still don't really have a starting goalkeeper. I've got Dubravka, who I'm playing every week. And I saw Phil Foden as that much of a priority that I played Dubravka again this week rather than, you know, going for the goalkeeper change, which was probably the sensible play because Foden felt so important. So yeah, I think we're both in agreement. If you don't have Foden, use one of your five free transfers to get Foden.
Yeah, and the rotation risk and the Pep roulette chat needs to be taken with a pinch of salt right now. And you need to analyse the City schedule and the City fixtures. And I've been saying for about a month, Foden's not going to lose minutes in the Premier League because he's that important. But also you need to look at what games he might be rotated in. And next midweek, EFL Cup quarterfinal versus Brentford, almost guaranteed that's his rest, right? That was always going to be his rest. Like going into this weekend, it was all, do we really want to buy Foden? He's got Real Madrid in 4 days. Yeah, and he can play two games in 4 days. He's fit. It's Phil Foden. If he needs to be rested and they're flying, they're 2-3-0 up, he'll get the 69-minute sub, which he got. But starting games is never in doubt. And actually, the Pep roulette chat right now shouldn't be a thing. We can say Pep's first choice 10 of the 11 with confidence at the minute. We can all name it. The only spot up for grabs, and look, Rodri's out injured, so let's just put Nico Gonzalez as the DM. The only spot up for grabs is it Cherki? Or is it Reinders? If it's Cherki, Bernardo Silva's playing central and Cherki's playing on the right. And if it's Reinders, Bernardo Silva plays on the right and Reinders is in the middle. That is the only spot of the 11 that's up for grabs. So don't worry about, you know, having a punt on a Doku or going for an O'Reilly. These players are first 11 and they'll get their rest versus Brentford.
And I do think that means, though, that if you have got Reinders still, and there are a lot of FPL managers that do still have Reinders in your team, and obviously in the midweek round, you'd have been delighted about that because he picks up a return. Moving into the weekend, you then find that, you know, he's not getting played. So I think we just need to be mindful of the fact that if it's Reinders, you probably need to just find the money to upgrade him to Phil Foden and be done with it. Let's have a quick word on Haaland before we move on to the next game, because he's seventh in the XG underachievers list for this week, which means that he was unlucky. I mean, I actually thought he might be a bit higher up this list, given it was a 3-0 win for Manchester City. But there were plenty of players above him. And when you look at that list, it's like the likes of Evan Nilsson and Watkins and Cunha and Saka, who had some big chances that they missed. But Haaland's seventh with an XG of, XG Delta rather, of 0.43. So
yeah,
probably should and could have got something out of this game. But it does make me think maybe there's an opportunity, particularly heading into game week 16. Maybe there's an opportunity not to not have him. That's not what I'm saying at all. You keep him. But maybe there's an opportunity to not hand him the armband.
Yeah, there is. There is. And part of the conversation always with Haaland captaincy is what are the alternatives? And this week, and we'll talk more about the alternatives, but Bruno Fernandes, the way he's playing, but mostly, I mean, if we watched Monday Night Football and you saw Wolves, it's like, oh, okay, have I got any players playing Wolves soon? Oh, yes, I've got Bukayo Saka at home to Wolves at the weekend, like straight away, great game. I guess we're just conscious of minutes for Haaland and the other captaincy candidates in the Champions League. And a lot of our decision-making happens after the Champions League because of both the form in those games and also the minutes. But yeah, I mean, going to Selhurst Park's not an easy fixture for Man City, although Palace have been amazing defensively this season. But the underlying numbers for Palace haven't been great. They are conceding chances. They're just getting away with it. They're just defending really well. The goalkeeper's brilliant. And the three centre-backs are all excellent, which is why they're all picking up so many defensive contribution points. So I still think Haaland's a great option for Palace, but I think many will be looking, I guess, at Saka. But just a quick note, Sam, on the Man City defence. This felt like it was always going to be a Man City clean sheet. And they do have those games at home against middling or lower opposition, with all due respect to Sunderland, who struggle to play with the ball. And therefore, when Man City are dominating possession and they're getting 70% possession, Sunderland just don't get the chances. And therefore, no. The clean sheets feel pretty safe. And O'Reilly is still affordable. Gvardiol is still the biggest goal threat at the back for Man City. You don't get the extras for defensive contributions. You often don't get bonus because bonus is competing with your teammates and you're competing with Haaland and Foden and Cherki. Yeah. But the defenders feel like they just get a quite nice flow of six-pointers. And again, the narrative with Man City is they always concede, a bit like Pep always rotates. I don't buy into either of those narratives right at the moment. There will be times when I say that, but at the moment, the way City are playing, those two things feel pretty secure. City clean sheets will come, and that 11 is fairly predictable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's because they've only had two clean sheets in their last six in the PL. So people look at it and go, well, I invested in Nico O'Reilly a couple of weeks ago because he was cheap and his ownership was quite low. And obviously it's now neither of those things, really. He's taken a lot of price rises and his ownership's relatively stable now and quite high. And Gvardiol's always been a popular choice. But I think we've kind of got away with it with Ruben Dias and Gvardiol over the last few weeks because there have been attacking returns that have come for them. Same with Nico O'Reilly. So when the clean sheets haven't been there, we have had that attacking upside. So when they get into a run of fixtures, which looks like it's going to be coming, where the clean sheets look like they're going to come and you've still got that attacking threat out of your defenders, then you can only hope that you get some nice double-digit hauls out of them. And maybe when they get in a clean sheet and an attacking return, that's when we might see some bonus points for them as well, particularly if it's a lowish scoring round for the attacking assets.
69 shots against them, Sam. Just looked at the numbers, Man City. They've faced the fewest shots by some distance. Arsenal have faced 83 shots, Chelsea 83, Newcastle second on 77, but Man City only 69 shots conceded. They don't lose possession, therefore they don't concede shots. So I think those clean sheets are coming.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Talking about clean sheets, let's talk about Arsenal because I think we all thought this one would be one of their toughest tests. And we were proven right. Like I was looking at my team going into this week and thinking, do you know what? Do I fancy Timber to keep a clean sheet? No, not really. But can I bring myself to bench him? Well, also, no, not really, because the ownership across that Arsenal defence is so high that if they do somehow keep a clean sheet against an Aston Villa side, who have low-key, by the way, been absolutely unreal since that appalling start to the season that they had. And we'll talk about Villa in a minute, but the Arsenal defence feels like you have to play them. It's a bit frustrating, this one, but anyway, we move.
You're happy not to have two in that fixture, though, aren't you? Like, there's a lot with the double up, and I think the double up could be the play, but for Villa, I was like, yeah, I'm fine with just Raya. Were you at the Spurs Stadium, Sam? I know you're a Spurs season ticket holder. I was at Spurs Brentford, and I was getting my pre-match pint, and I was watching Arsenal on the big screen. Wendia obviously scored, and the reception on the by the way, Europe's longest bar, I was stood by, and the Spurs fans all cheering for Wendia. In the Villa goal, it was quite the atmosphere.
We do love a goal conceded against for the Arsenal defence. It's funny, isn't it? Because I think you're absolutely right. I had both Gabriel and Timber for quite a long time, and obviously with the Gabriel injury, sold Gabriel. And going into this week, I thought, do you know what? I don't think this is the week where I want to upgrade my Arsenal investment from two back up to three again. I think next week is going to be the week where I want to do that. But this week, I just didn't feel like it was because Villa have really impressed me over recent weeks. And do you know what? If it wasn't for Ollie Watkins not finishing his chances, Villa could and should have scored more than they did against this Arsenal defence. They were phenomenal. The way that Morgan Rodgers and Tielemans manipulated the gameplay with Rodgers cutting in, they dominated the midfield and it confused the Arsenal midfield in a way that we haven't really seen for a long time this season. And Watkins was through on goal a number of times and then didn't finish his chances, which is why he was second for XG underachievers across the game week. Only ever Nilsson expected to achieve more than Watkins did. He had an XG delta of 0.83. So really unlucky if you have Watkins in your team that you didn't get more. But yeah, I am. As a Timber owner and as a Saka owner, I'm absolutely delighted to have them going into this one. I was pleased to see Saka pick up another attacking return in this one because that means he's not had any blanks in the last five matches if we include DEFCON, which is important. It's just a bit frustrating because Saka's my kind of Bruno Fernandes spot, if you like, in terms of prices.
And you need more.
I need more than just four out of Bukayo Saka. And now probably going into the game against Wolves, I'll hopefully get that because he is very high on my captaincy radar for this week.
Yeah, me too. I think I'm keen to see his minutes in the Champions League. And obviously Madueke being back now does mean the early substitutions for Saka are possible, just as a way of resting him. And I think in years gone by, Arteta, some might say that he's pushed players like Saka too far because he's not trusted his bench, and Saka's played every minute under the sun. This season already, we've seen a little bit more rotation and early substitutions for Saka, partly down to his injuries and Arteta knowing, you know, play him too much, he's going to get injured. But also, Madueke is a great bench option who's now back fit. The only reason I guess I'm contemplating not captaining Saka versus Wolves is I'm worried about him not getting 90. But maybe if he gets substituted, you could argue it's because they're 3-0 up, and if they're 3-0 up, he's been involved. So yeah, interesting one. Hincapié is interesting for a cheap route to the Arsenal defence. I want an update on Gabriel's fitness, and maybe we get that this week. We were originally told he's going to miss the festive schedule, and I'm still playing by that. Yeah. If that's the case, Hincapié could get 5-6 games as the left centre back. He's 5.4. So for me, I've got Raya and I've got Saka. If I want another Arsenal defender, I don't want to spend $6.5 million on Timber. I can't go to Calafiori. He's suspended. He's got his five yellow cards. Hincapié feels like someone I could just play for the next 5-6 weeks. And then, yes, a transfer out waiting to happen, but I've banked loads of points. And he does quite well in the DEFCON. Like he out-DEFCON'd his centre-back partner, Timber, at the weekend. Mm. So one I'm looking at as a bit of an upgrade at the back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? Because Timber played at centre-back, wasn't delighted to see that, but I was expecting it given the injuries to both Gabriel and Saliba. But it did mean that Timber picked up his first DEFCON points of the season. So,
no assists or goals, but you get the DEFCON. So,
small wins, we take them and you know, we move with that. So I was relatively happy with that one. I guess that shows you what we've all... I guess in that moment, what happened with Timber in this game is a prime example of what we've known all season, that it's the centre-backs that are the ones that are doing the DEFCON work, and we're seeing that across the team.
And fullbacks will be cheaper next year because of it. They have
probably,
to be, because no one's buying fullbacks now.
No.
You know, it's really hard to justify the fullback prices at the minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than, you know, Daniel Munoz, who goes and scores loads of goals, but most of them, if they're not getting DEFCON, the centre-backs are just better value.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And I think that kind of stacks with the Villa defenders as well, right?
We
know the Villa defenders over the last few weeks have actually been decent as well, some decent returns. And no clean sheet here, but I don't think you were expecting a clean sheet for them against Arsenal anyway. But Matt Cash, little shout out for him. He started every Premier League game so far this season. He's one of the few defenders in the game to hit double digits for both shots and chances created with 15 and 13 respectively. But his XG is very low. So although we're seeing goals and returns from him, we aren't really expecting to see those. It's 0.59 across the season. So it's not like he's, you know, if we were seeing 0.59 every game for Matt Cash, you'd go, okay, well, there's some attacking threat there. But in terms of shots on goal and stuff, we aren't seeing that regularly, despite the fact that he's having these opportunities and he's creating chances. But I do like what's happening with Villa, and they are a team that I definitely think over the next few weeks I need to find some investment in, both at the back, probably with Cash, and also in the middle with Morgan Rodgers as well.
Yeah, they're cheap defenders. They've had more goals outside the box this season than any other team, and Matty Cash will shoot from distance, hence the low XG chances. But Emery, it's clearly part of his game plan. It's like, no, have some shots from distance, and it's working. We've seen so many worldies from distance. We can all probably picture them this season from Villa. They've scored loads of them. Kamara recently, Matty Cash has, the free kicks of Buendia and Rodgers. Should we move on, Sam, to Leeds Liverpool, because this was a 6-goal thriller. I was driving back from the Spurs stadium listening on the radio, and I was like, it's just another goal. I feel like this shows Liverpool's vulnerabilities. Like, in FPL, should we be considering Liverpool assets right now? I still think, because they're going to score lots of goals and there's still some value options up top, they're still on our agenda in attack.
Ooh.
But gosh, in defence, there's a lot of Virgil van Dijk owners out there, myself included.
And me.
And I see the fixtures and I'm like, just give him another game. I see the fact he keeps getting these big-headed chances. Again, he should have scored versus Leeds. Give him another game, Gianni. And now I'm looking at it going, I don't have another Arsenal defender. I want another Palace defender. Do I just make that switch? And it feels obvious, but at the same time, it feels like Virgil's going to start producing the goods.
Do you know what's really tough about the Virgil thing as well is that when you have a Liverpool defender in your team, it prevents you from benching him in the same way with Arsenal. So I'm looking at my team for this week. I've got Timber and I've got Virgil. And I'm like, well, I don't actually necessarily think either of them is going to keep a clean sheet. But I can't bench either of them because they're my expensive premium defenders. And when you invest in these expensive premium defenders, you must play them. That, in my head, That's how I think. So I'm looking at my, and I'm looking at, you know, the likes of Van der Ven and Senesi on my bench. And I'm thinking, well, I would expect Brentford and Chelsea to score. So I'll go with these two because Virgil does get DEFCON and he was the only player to get defensive contribution points in this fixture. So we do have the upside of that from him. And you always have the threat of set pieces with Virgil and the fact that Leeds, you know, haven't been great from defending against set pieces this season. This was such an interesting game for me. So Leeds had a really low XG across the first 70 minutes of this game. It ranged at points between 0.47 and 1.49, but there was not much happening for them in attack. Konate has this moment of madness where he just, all he has to do is stay on his feet, just stay on your feet and see it out for a corner. And Liverpool will defend the corner because they had been doing that across the rest of the game. But instead of doing that, he dives in, gives away the penalty. And as we know, you give away a penalty, the likelihood is it's going to be scored. And then that gives the team that are scoring the boost that they need. And it also sent Konate into a spiral. So then they concede again. Liverpool have now conceded the joint most goals from set pieces in the Premier League with 10, which is absolutely unreal. Half of the goals that they've conceded this season have come from dead balls. It's 42%, almost half. That's madness from Liverpool because this is a team that usually are stoic in their defending of dead balls and set pieces because they've got Virgil at the back who's there and he heads everything away. And we've had this like great back line for Liverpool. But wow, they did their best to chuck this game away in a game that they really should have comfortably won from 2-0 up.
Yeah, and then Szoboszlai goes and gets what he thinks is the winner with 10 minutes left, makes it 3-2, and still the soft centre of Liverpool comes out and they concede late. Like looking at the goals conceded this season, only Brentford, Leeds, Bournemouth and Burnley, only four teams have conceded more goals than Liverpool's 15 goals conceded. It's not pretty. It's not pretty, but at the same time, as you mentioned, take the first hour of that football match, it looked like a bank of clean sheets. And I'm listening on the radio going, yeah, like Virgil's got DEFCON in the bag. He's probably getting a clean. And if he does, he's getting bonus points. And straight away, that's a double-digit haul for a defender. Bonus points, clean sheet and DEFCON, big score. And I do think when you look at the Liverpool fixtures, like Brighton at home, Tottenham away, Wolves at home, Leeds at home, it's a good run of four. And I feel like I'm probably going to have other fires or other important actions where I just go, let's keep him. But obviously, I'm really keen to see what happens with Liverpool and the circus around Liverpool at the minute, because you know, there's clearly dressing room unrest. And does that upset the squad, or do we see the squad bounce back from that and put in a really big performance in the Champions League? So I guess watch this space with them.
Yeah, we've also got injuries and illness in the squad as well, with Gakpo out injured, picking it up and being out for a few weeks, as Slot said, in the preparation for the Champions League, and Chiesa's ill as well. So, and then obviously you've got Salah going off to AFCON. So we do have a bit of a flux at Liverpool at the moment in terms of what that starting 11 is going to look like, who's going to play well. You know that Virgil's going to start. So from a security of starts perspective, you're fine. But realistically, when I look at those fixtures, particularly in the next two with Brighton and Spurs, those are teams that are scoring goals. So I don't necessarily see clean sheets there for Liverpool. And they do have these moments of sleepwalking in games where they just either shoot themselves in the foot or just concede a sloppy goal here or there. So we'll have to watch in brief, I think, on Liverpool over the next couple of weeks.
I'm feeling like you're going to sell him and I'm going to keep him is what I'm getting from this.
I feel like going from him to Matty Cash might be one of the easiest transfers that I make this season, because Matty Cash has got West Ham this week at a time where Liverpool have got Brighton. Yeah. And, you know, whilst over the next few weeks, I might not want to play Matty Cash in every single game that they have coming up because they've got Manchester United, Chelsea and Arsenal that follow that. The freeing up of the budget there is really important because it means I can invest elsewhere. And it also means that it brings back into play the likes of my Spurs defender or my Bournemouth defender, who I'm having to bench most weeks because I'm having Virgil in my team. So I think it allows for the rotation around the defenders, and that feels like the way you should be playing FPL right now, with the exception of Arsenal, where you want to play them every week. I feel like rotating the squad of defenders to target the fixtures is the way we should be playing it this season, maybe with the exception of Crystal Palace, because If you are a Daniel Munoz owner...
You can't drop those guys. You can't drop those defenders, can you? Because there's so many routes, they all get the extra points. Like, whether it's Richards and his amazing DEFCON, or Gahee, who just seems to get goals and assists like never before. Lacroix plays every minute and is still very solid. Munoz has the highest upside of any defender in the game.
Yep.
It's unbelievable the wealth of options we've got. You have to have a Palace defender. Which one is a big question? And I guess the other part of that question is, should you have two?
Do you know what is funny, isn't it? Because going into this one, when the team sheet came out and Munoz wasn't there, I was like, right, okay, this is great. This is an opportunity for me as a Gahee owner to gain some real ground over the Munoz owners. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time, they're leveling it out, aren't they? Like, we saw that in the midweek. Like, you get a goal out of one of them, then the other one's getting an assist and some DEFCON. And it's just like, oh, goodness me, between the two of you, it's just points galore. So this felt like an opportunity. So when Fulham scored, and we'll talk about Harry Wilson in a minute.
But oh, what a goal.
I know, but I when Pat, when they scored, and I was like, oh, that's so frustrating, because the Palace clean sheet is kind of like, it's a banker in my head that they're going to get them now, because they're playing so, so well at the minute. So when at the end of the game, I'm sat there and Gahee scores, I was like, you are joking with him at the minute. I just... He's so good. And yeah, like you say, alongside Timber, they're like, he's just like ever present in my defence. So that's what I mean about having Virgil, because if I'm going to play those two every week, how on earth am I fitting Van de Ven and Sanetti into my team when they've got a decent fixture? So yeah, the Palace defence feels that way. I am pondering on going actually with the second one, maybe as an option. I think I'd go down to Richard, you know, because of the consistency of the returns of DEFCON from him.
It's so good. When you look at total points for defenders this season, Richards is 10th. Like only 9 defenders have more points than him. He's got 72. Lacroix is 5th. Munoz is 2nd and Gahee's 1st.
Isn't it?
There are 4 Palace defenders in the top 10. And it's not just like they've kept way more clean sheets than everyone. It's not. It's the extras.
No.
It's the DEFCON, it's the goals, it's the assists. So look, fair play. Glasner's doing an amazing job. The back 5 clearly suits them and suits the defender points.
Yeah.
The fixtures aren't that pretty, but I don't think that matters, because Palace caused the big teams problems. They will keep a clean sheet in a tough game.
They will.
And then they get the bonus points in the DEFCON as well. So it's Man City, Leeds, Tottenham, Fulham, Newcastle up next. But you wouldn't be surprised to see Hall's continuing. Richards is the cheapest though, Sam. So I hear you, especially for someone that's maybe playing part of a rotation. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But then you're probably, you know, you've already got Gahee, but Munoz is 6.1. Like if you're buying Munoz, it's a real considered purchase now because of the price rises. And obviously he's had a knee injury. He does play with a knee bandage on that right knee. So let's see. We get Palace on Thursday night, don't we, in Europe? So again, we'll get more touch points with Glasner. We'll get more of an update on players like Daniel Munoz. But watch this space on Palace continuing to be very good. Certainly holds, if not buys, at the back despite tough fixtures.
What about up top though, Gianni? Because Mateta... Oh,
I sold him this week, so I was happy he blanked. He's not getting 90 now, is he? You know, like it's
like,
you know,
60 minutes every week, isn't it? Like, he's obviously tired. The minutes played constantly with midweek and weekends. It's proving problematic for him. And he's obviously been called up to the French squad as well. So he's obviously now getting international minutes in a way that he wasn't. So if you think about him last season, not really that much involved in the France squad, no European football, 1 game a week. No surprise to see him playing really well. We're like doubling his game time effectively adding in
He's not used to it.
And they're not used to it. And it's tiring. And he's playing without Ismaïla Sarr now with the injury that he's picked up. So there's more responsibility on him. I held Mateta for this one, mostly because I only had one free transfer and I wanted a Phil Foden in my team. And so Mateta, I was like, oh, I don't feel like hitting you out for a -4 is necessarily the right thing to do. And it wasn't, because I would only have gone across to Thiago.
Which is what I did. And then Spurs went and put in an outstanding defensive performance, you know.
That doesn't happen very often. We'll talk about that in a minute. I think Mateta is high on my sale list now, though, with the 5 free transfers coming in. Mateta to Thiago is very popular amongst FPL managers right now. And I'm not surprised, despite the blank for Thiago this week. That's another blank for Mateta. In fact, the only time that he's returned recently is when I didn't have him, because I was on a free hit in 13. So the ultimate trolling from Jean-Philippe Mateta to my FPL team with that one. So yes, you know, we saw him get a penalty that week. Fine. We're not really seeing his involvement, and he's tired. He's coming off early. I don't like that rotation. So that does mean I'm likely to move across to Brentford. Here's an opportunity for me to talk positively about Spurs, Gianni. It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, a clean sheet and load of chances and goals. It was a very good performance from Xavi Simmons as well.
Yeah, unreal. And I think, you know, like I said at the beginning of, or in that last chat, the only reason I haven't bought Thiago in already is because I wanted Phil Foden for last week. But Thiago was kept very quiet by a Spurs defence that at home have been awful this season. So
he was
so
isolated as well. He was playing against the back four alone. You know,
the one thing I will say is that Spurs do have a fabulous record against Brentford. They are one of those clubs that just don't seem to do very well against us. So whenever we play them, I always feel like we might get something. But what I didn't see is the performance that Spurs put in and the clean sheet that would come from it. I thought Brentford would score. I was quite worried about not having Thiago this week, but they did isolate him really well. Xavi Simmons, this was the performance that Spurs fans have been waiting for a long time. A goal and an assist out of him. Felt like he'd been on the weights over the last few weeks when he hasn't been playing. A bit more physical, a bit more muscle about him, a bit more grit, maybe a little bit less easy to move off of the ball. And that comes against a really good Brentford defence and a really good solid Brentford midfield.
Don't give you space.
Correct.
He found all this space between the lines and it's like, Brentford don't give you that space. You know, they've got two sitting midfielders, a really aggressive centre-back pairing, and still he was popping up between Henderson and Yarmolenko and the centre-back pairing, finding space. And Maddison said on Monday Night Football, Xavi Simmons quite, you look at his frame and go, you know, is he quite a lightweight footballer? But he said, he surprised him in training how much he actually quite likes to get stuck in.
Yeah, and I think we haven't seen that yet. And that's been, and I mean, I sit there every week and watch us. And every time I watch him, I'm like, come on, just be a bit more physical, get involved. This was it. This was the game. And I was watching it thinking, yes, Xavi, you've come. Like, this is what we've been waiting for. Is it too early to go there in FPL? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely it is. I mean, it's Forest up next, who I thought we were improving and then took a big step back again in this game week. And then after that, it's the Liverpool game before Palace, Brentford again, and then Sunderland. So it's very mixed bag of fixtures for Spurs. I don't think Xavi is the right player to go to. I've got Kudus. I felt very hard done by that. I didn't get an attacking return out of Kudus this game week again. He was phenomenal in that first half in particular. He had the beating of the Brentford player who was up against him the whole of that first half.
I think they made a left-back sub at half-time. Rico Henry came on early in the second half
with Kudus,
because of that. And he had, I think, more crosses than any other player. He was phenomenal, Kudus. And remember, guys, Kudus isn't going to AFCON, nor is Semenyo. They're Ghanaian, and somehow Ghana haven't qualified for AFCON, despite being qualified for the World Cup. They're in England's group for the World Cup. They're not AFCON. So, you don't have to worry about selling Kudus or Semenyo.
Yep, you can keep them both. A little shout out for Richarlison. That's another goal for him. Moves him to sixth for points amongst the forwards this season. He's only 2 points less than Mateta, who we've all been waxing lyrical about. And 5 points behind João Pedro now, because he's
similar
been just churning
point.
Over this. Yep. And I think, you know, when you look at the fact that João Pedro doesn't come on when Liam Delap gets injured in your game, and Mateta's losing form and is clearly tired and coming off early, there is always a risk with Richarlison in the aftermath of Champions League game, with Tell not in the Champions League squad and with Kola Muani playing really well now, that we don't see him get a start here or there. But as a relatively cheap forward option, Richarlison's putting his hand up to be an FPL team. So, yeah, an interesting one to know. If you've got Brentford players, though, don't panic. I think, you know, going forward, they still look like really nice buys, and they're second in the fixture ticker up until game week 20. So it's Leeds up next before Wolves, Bournemouth and Spurs again and Everton. So I would expect some returns from Thiago over the next few weeks.
Three of the next four at home as well. Those good fixtures are mostly home games, which for Brentford is a big swing. Like, you want Brentford at home. Let's move on, Sam, and go and talk about Evan Nilsson and Bournemouth. Well, I say Evan Nilsson, more Semenyo, but I was just, as a Semenyo owner, I'm so annoyed with Evan Nilsson, because if Evan Nilsson could finish his dinner, Semenyo would be in so many points. Semenyo comes off with 3 points and he's dropping in price. People are selling Semenyo now, and I get it. You look at the results and you go, loads of blanks I'm going to get rid, and there's Foden, there's the Man United mids to go to, Saka too. Semenyo was this close to a double-digit return. If Evan Nilsson isn't offside in the opening 10 minutes, and it was marginal, Semenyo scores early on, right? VAR ruled it out for Evan Nilsson being offside. Then Evan Nilsson misses the biggest chance ever, put on a plate to him by Semenyo. Goal and assist. Semenyo was part of eight eight attempts. There was 13 for Bournemouth in the game. Eight of them, Semenyo had something to do with. I feel like Halls are coming, and I know it's Man United away next, but after that, it's Burnley at home. Mm. And knowing Burnley at home is around the corner, I don't think I can sell Semenyo.
So I lost the plot with Semenyo after the midweek round and was just like, I'm done and I need a Phil Foden spot and Semenyo can be it because I had the money in the bank. So I sold him. And then when it flashed up on my phone that he'd scored early on in that game against Chelsea, I was like, oh, why? Why now? But actually then it gets ruled out. And he's, like you say, he's so unlucky that he doesn't get something in this game. And that's 2 weeks in a row now that...
He's been amazing.
Yeah, that he's played well. And he is finding form again.
He's playing for a move. I mean, there's that 65 million clause has been well documented. Mm. There are clubs sniffing around and probably going to trigger that in January. And with that in mind, Semenyo's playing for a move and a contract.
Yeah, I thought actually I was really impressed by Bournemouth in this game. I mean, they restricted Chelsea to zero big chances. That doesn't happen, by the way. Mm. That doesn't happen with the Chelsea attack. And an XG of just 0.92. Again, that doesn't happen with Chelsea. We always see much higher XG than that. Yeah. Senesi, though, just gets to that all-important hour mark. He goes down and gets medical treatment in the 57th, somehow manages to do another 5 minutes. So he goes off on 62.
He plays FPL.
He does, yeah. Well, I was... And
captained
I was,
himself.
Do you know what? When he went down on 57, I was like, oh, I've benched him. So if he goes off now, which it looked like he was going to, I was like, I've dodged a bit of a bullet here because Chelsea weren't really looking like getting anything out of the game. Iraola has said he hopes it's just cramp. So we're just going to have to wait for next week's press conference to see what's been said about Senesi, because you know, over the next few weeks you are definitely going to want to have them in, maybe not for Manchester United because of the potential, but I would expect a DEFCON out of Senesi against Manchester United for sure, so it feels like at least four, but then after that is that Burnley game and Senesi against Burnley. I definitely want a bit of that,
and that's a DEFCON game too, weirdly. When you play Burnley, the centre-backs get DEFCON because they just lump it long all the time. So you know, and Senesi got DEFCON against Chelsea in 60 minutes, like that's amazing.
Yeah. Let's have a quick chat about Chelsea. I know you won't really want to, but Dolapov injured again with a shoulder injury. Suggestions that might be 6 to 8 weeks. Yep. I was interested in it was Joao Pedro that came on. It was Guiu who came off the bench for him. So I thought that was interesting. Palmer starts, but doesn't go long in the game. I don't think any of us were surprised about that. It's going to be a gradual build back in. Isn't going to feature in UCL either. So that feels positive for us in FPL as well. Too early, I think, to go there still, but on the radar that Palmer's on his way back, I think.
Maresca's really good at easing players back. He doesn't rush them. And he's really good at managing injuries. So look at Reece James. Reece James hasn't been injured since forever now. I think he's been a year without a proper injury, Reece James, like a major one. But he has had little tweaks where he's just gone, I'm going to sit you out for a week. Or he'd make sure he doesn't play three times in a week. Or he doesn't go on international duty. Well, he'll do the same with Palmer. And because of that, Palmer isn't an FPL event yet. He might be in a fortnight's time. Number nine, though, Joao Pedro isn't an out-and-out nine, and Maresca knows this. Mm. But with Palmer back in the team playing 10, you'd think Joao Pedro's route to the 11 is as the nine, but there'll be games where Joao Pedro plays 10 and Palmer misses out. Leaves us short with number nine options. Pedro Neto might get more minutes there. We've seen that in the last few weeks, and Pedro Neto is the first choice wide man at Chelsea, but a guaranteed starter when fit. But Marc Guiu now, his minutes have just shot up. I wouldn't be surprised to see Marc Guiu get a Premier League start, which we don't see much of in the next few weeks. So watch this space. If you've got the luxury of making a sort of an enabler transfer, you want to free up funds, Marc Guiu, if you've used your bench boost, you can hide on the bench, but maybe play if you think you're going to get a start every now and then. I think he's going to get all right minutes because Chelsea are really short of options up there.
Two players I just want to give a quick budget enabling shout out to for this week before we end, Johnny. Bruno Guimarães has now returned at least DEFCON in all bar one match since game week 7. I said this in the official pod last week. In that time, he's now registered 14-2, 10-10, 10-4-4, 10-4-7, and now another 10-pointer in this one. Wow. Phenomenal from him. And the other one is a player that we spoke about just before we came live.
Yeah, we both called it.
Yeah, with Dewsbury Hall. He had 3 shots in game week 15. We both sold him when we wildcarded, which was a bit of a frustration for both of us. One thing I would say about Dewsbury Hall is whilst we've seen 3 goals in 4 matches from him, his home and away form is quite different. So when he's playing at the Hill Dickinson Stadium, he's averaging an attempt to every 52.3 minutes, which is perfect for us in FPL as a cheap midfielder option. But when he's away from home, that extends out to 122.2 minutes on the road. So there is a discrepancy in what we're seeing there. But because he's going to be your budget midfielder option, that doesn't so much matter because when Everton are playing at home, you can play him. And if you get a difficult fixture on the road, you bench him. But actually, when you look at their away fixtures that they have coming up, two of them are against Burnley and Nottingham Forest. And I would expect him to be able to get something about against both of those two sides, given their form lately.
Yeah, and Everton defence, Tarkowski, Michael Keane, both keep picking up points. Yeah. You know, it's obvious. David Moyes' teams keep clean sheets. We should probably shop there a little bit more than we do. And yeah, Dewsbury Hall, if he's your 7th or 8th attacker, it's fine. Plays part of the rotation. He's been amazing. I'm curious to know who's going to take penalties with Ndiaye at AFCON. The way Dewsbury Hall is playing, he's become a main man in this team. I wonder if he just goes, I'm having them. I don't see Tino Barry taking them.
No.
Maybe Grealish or Garner could step up, but it wouldn't surprise me if Dewsbury Hall goes, I'm now the main man here. Mm-hmm. And the way he's playing, it's the confidence is there. Sam, Brighton West Ham 1-1. Just touching on Minter has been super popular. I've owned Minter since my game week 7 wildcard. Someone I'm getting quite frustrated with might be on the chopping block. I think there's better budget mids and he is in that budget category of just over 6 million. I look at Elliot Anderson at Forest, just know you're going to get DEFCON from him. Mm-hmm. I look at Dewsbury Hall and know you've got those explosive ceilings. I think they're both better options than Minter at the moment. So I think I'm happy to sell. And then Jarrod Bowen, top for shots across all players in the game in the last 6 matches. 21 shots.
Mad, right?
And he plays every minute.
Yeah. And you know what you're getting with Jarrod Bowen. And, you know, West Ham this season haven't been great, but we are starting to see the green shoots coming in this West Ham team. And they were really unlucky in this one. This should have been 3 points. They can see right at the death. All right, the next couple aren't great because it's Villa up next. And we've waxed lyrical about how good Villa have been recently before the trip to Man City. But then after that, you know, there's some opportunities, I think. It's Fulham and then Brighton again before a game against Wolves in what feels like a bit of a relegation battle in game week 20 around Christmas. So let's just be mindful of Bowen because I do think that he's putting himself back in the shop window, going low-key under the radar because of West Ham and the way that they've been playing, but we shouldn't overlook him.
Yeah, and worth mentioning, the fixtures we've just had. So game week 15 fixtures, if you're really happy with your returns or you like the opposition, that same schedule is repeated in game week 19. So again, you're Man United, you get Wolves again, you know? So some good matchups. You know, Everton, they get to go and play Forest again. They've just beaten them 3-0. So do watch out for that. Very rare you see that in FPL, so it's two so close together. But look, loads of fun chatting, Sam. There's midweek football this week with all the European games. So the general advice, as always in these weeks, is to save your transfers and be patient. Of course, there's lots of price rises. The last thing you want to do, though, is be bringing in a player that goes and gets injured in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Jules Kelly and I are going to be back on Thursday, and Jules will be giving one of his incredible roundups, I'm sure. It always impresses me with his knowledge of European football. So give that a listen before you make any transfers, particularly if they're transfers affecting the European assets.
Yeah, and if you haven't already done so, don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League as well. The code is XY6. XPL. Sam, it's been great chatting. Good luck for the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll be checking in a couple more times before the end with you on off the bench. But good luck this weekend as well.
Yeah, good luck to you too. Green arrows, everybody. Hope it goes well.